Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Stuart Acuff with Utility Workers Union of America, asking you to tune in every time you can to Bob Carson's Carson's Corner, one of the best pro-labor shows in America. We love it at Utility Workers. We love it across the AFL-CIO, and we're grateful to Bob for coming on and holding up our issues and holding up our principles and values.
My name is Angelo Carasone, better known as Stop Back on Twitter, and primarily I spend my time trying to debunk right-wing lies that permeate our media, and there's, you know, one of the places that we do it is on Bob Carson's show.
This is Lamar Waldron, the author of Ultimate Sacrifice and Legacy of Secrecy, those two books, the latter of which will become a movie produced and starring Leonardo DiCaprio in 2013. And you are listening to Carson's Corner with Bob Carson on Underground Progressive Radio.
This is Les Leopold, the author of How to Make $1 Million an Hour. And I just want to tell you that you'll get a rich and rewarding experience by listening to Carson's Corner.
Hi there. This is Justin Ray Harvey of J. Ray Radio and the co-host of Carson's Corner with Bob Carson. We have an announcement. We are no longer affiliated with Underground Progressive Radio 5:30 a.m. Even though we've had a critical change in the programming, our programming will remain the same. Times are subject to change, so just sit back and enjoy the program as you normally would. The only change is we've grown bigger and better, and like I said, we no longer support or advertise Underground Progressive Radio 5:30 a.m. in any way. Thank you and show some respect.
This is Greg Pallas, reporter for BBC Television and Democracy Now, and author of the new book Vultures Picnic, In Pursuit of Petroleum Pigs, Power Pirates, and High Finance Carnivores, and you're listening to Carson's Corner on 5:30 a.m. Underground Progressive Radio, radio for the 99%. Help us occupy the airwaves and support Carson's Corner and support 5:30 Underground Progressive Radio.
Hi, this is David Levitt, your host from SYM Radio. SYM Radio is helping raise awareness to missing persons, parental stranger abductions, and human trafficking through our partners. We also raise awareness that people with disabilities can do whatever they set their mind to through the love of God and Christ. And we're proud to be an affiliate with Carson's Corner, and you're listening to Carson's Corner with J. Ray and Bob Carson on Underground Progressive Radio and also at SYMradio.com/live.
Hi, this is Frank Schaefer, author of Sex, Mom, and God. You're listening to Carson's Corner, a show I enjoy. I hope you enjoy it, too. I encourage you to listen.
All right, welcome live to another edition of Carson's Corner Progressive Radio here on Blog Talk Radio and also part of the CommonsProjectNetwork.com. We encourage you to check out all of the independent progressive material on that great website. My name is Bob Carson. J-Ray should be joining me. Actually, he's on the line right now. Let's bring in our co-host for the evening. J-Ray, how are you, man?
I'm doing fantastic. I'm ready to go, ready to roll, and ready to do this thing. It's a done deal, Bob Carson.
It's a done deal. That's absolutely correct here. We have the chat room open for anybody that wants to chime in there. And, of course, if you want to call us throughout the show, you can. 347-326-9749. 347-326-9749. We always have an open mic here. Anything is going to be on the table. You know, we like to talk about a lot of different issues. There's no nothing out of bounds, nothing that you can't ask or we can't say or anything like that. And that's the way we like to do it here on Carson's Corner. And I wanted to start off by talking about what's going on in Syria right now. I generally don't cover foreign events. I don't cover, you know, foreign conflicts. You know, if the United States is involved in a foreign conflict like the Iraq War or the Afghanistan War, we'll cover it here on Carson's Corner from time to time. But I generally like to stay away from, you know, foreign conflicts because, you know, the whole Middle East is fighting, and it's difficult to keep track of who's fighting who and all the turmoil in the Middle East. And not to suggest it's not important, because it is, but it's just something that I don't study. I don't really follow it very closely, the conflicts in the Middle East. But the Syria situation, the civil war in Syria, I just wanted to kind of give my thoughts, and Jay Ray, of course, will get your thoughts on it, because I'm sure you're like me, where, you know, you're really not paying attention to it. But now it's reached a certain point now where the Assad regime has used chemical weapons, and 1,000 Syrians have been killed. And this is a very, very serious situation, because anytime a dictatorship or anytime anybody uses chemical weapons, it violates international laws. Okay, there hasn't been a chemical weapons attack probably in 2 decades. I think, you know, it's difficult, but I think maybe Iraq, when Saddam Hussein gassed the Kurds, I think that may have been the last time that chemical weapons were used, and that was a very, very you know, complex situation in which the Reagan administration didn't want to do anything to Saddam Hussein. He was our buffer against Iran, and we even gave him the weapons that he used. And you know, you can remember Donald Rumsfeld actually hugging Saddam Hussein. He was our guy at the moment. And now, you know, you have chemical weapons being used. There is talk of a U.S. military strike, which is all but imminent right now. You know, President Obama is going around trying to call Republicans to get Republicans to support a military strike. This is not going to be a strike that is going to require congressional approval. However, President Obama is going to try to get some sort of international community consensus here on how to deal with this situation, because it just makes our lives easier. It gives the United States more credibility. If you reach out to our allies like Britain and France and other countries, which President Obama has done, then you have more credibility in the eyes of the world, in the eyes of the international community. And here's another thing, too, that the international community is actually working with us to exactly verify what happened, because, you know, weapons of mass destruction, Justin, as you know, has really been a canard, something that has been a term, a phrase that has been used to deceive the American people into supporting and scaring the American people into supporting a ridiculous conflict that is known as the Iraq War. And so, you know, there are people that are skeptical, obviously, of the claim that chemical weapons were used. However, as somebody that is a skeptic, I can say that there is ample evidence that this did occur. The international community, the UN, is confirmed this. 1,000 people have been dead. You know, various international agencies have also confirmed this. So this is not, you know, the run-up to the Iraq War where, oh, you know, Saddam Hussein has weapons of mass destruction, even though nobody can verify that, even though there was no evidence of that. It's just the Bush administration's word. That's not the case here, okay? Now, having said that, I'm sure you would agree with this, Justin. Nobody wants American boots. Nobody wants our soldiers to go into Syria to try to get in the middle of a civil war. It never works out when we try to get involved in a civil war. It just doesn't. It's too much to ask our soldiers. And the American people do not support any type of military operation that involves soldiers going into a civil war. You're having a very small percentage of the American people now even supporting airstrikes, okay? So, the idea of us getting involved in a civil war that really is almost unwinnable for us because nobody's comfortable with the Assad regime and nobody's comfortable with the rebels. So nobody knows. You've got two sects here, two groups here, one of which has al-Qaeda ties that are almost equally as bad and equally as brutal. So it just doesn't serve any purpose for us to really put soldiers on the ground to try to get in the middle of a civil war. On the other hand, if you have somebody that uses chemical weapons and there's no retaliation from the United States, then that sends a message to dictators out there that, hey, listen, you could use chemical weapons, and the United States is a paper tiger, and they're not going to do anything about it. So I understand the complexity of this issue. There's also the political fallout from this issue, the political calculations. So it is a very, very complex issue. There's no question about that. But, what are we going to do? How do you handle the situation? Because it's not enough to imply or apply economic sanctions because you have Russia and China that are business partners of Syria and have vested interests in that country. And Russia has even come out and said that the use of chemical weapons has been a provocation, has been prompted by the rebels. So, you've got Russia that can't even come out and condemn a chemical attack. It's unbelievable. But I'll tell you, this is really scary. It really is, because the Syrians have vowed to retaliate against us. As I mentioned, you have other countries. It could be potentially the start of World War II or World War III. And I got to tell you, man, this is the last thing that this country needs is to get into another war.
Absolutely, Bob. I couldn't agree more. It's like this. If other countries want to fight, Bob, let them fight, but don't drag the U.S. in the middle of it.
Yeah, that seems to be the consensus. And, just the thing of it is that, and this is one argument too. Oh, we have a moral responsibility to help other countries and to help people that are being gassed. And I can understand that argument. However, we can't pick and choose where we go. The reason why we're going to strike, we're going to have some sort of military strike, whether it's cruise missiles or other tactical strikes, where you could have, air personnel flying over the Civil War. The reason why we're going to do it is because President Obama had put the red line out there saying that if the Assad regime uses chemical weapons, that would cross a red line, and therefore, they crossed the red line. They clearly used chemical weapons. I mean, think about it. 1,000 people have been killed, women, children, the like. And, so President Obama has to do something about it because, he's painted himself in that corner. There's just no question about that. But there's one argument out there that says that the United States of America has supported dictatorships all throughout the world. You can make an argument that somebody should have saved the people that Augusto Pinochet slaughtered in Chile. You can make an argument that somebody should have saved the people that, Batista, the right-wing dictator of Cuba, slaughtered in the 50s and 60s. Or what about Guatemala, or what about, you know, Nicaragua, or you just go down the line of, you know, brutal acts, none involving chemical weapons, but nonetheless, you know, thousands of people dying by U.S.-backed coups and U.S.-backed right-wing dictatorships. So that's an issue, too, is that we can't be the policemen of the world. And believe me, you know, we have military bases all across the world. We have a huge military presence everywhere. And historically, it just doesn't work like that. I mean, you know, we can do some things, but when we get involved with civil wars, when we invade other countries, okay, and try to, you know, reform their government to a government that we think may, I don't know, accept our business interests or may be more in line with our version of democracy, it doesn't work out. It just doesn't. You know, you can't really do anything about it. And that's what's so complex about this situation is that, you know, if you look at World War II, after World War II, Germany and Japan wanted to reform themselves, and you had the Marshall Plan, which really helped those countries. I mean, after World War II, you know, Germany was Europe was absolutely a mess. I mean, you had hundreds of millions of people looking for jobs. People were starving to death, and you know, we were urged as Americans to give up our food and send it over there to help those people, and we ultimately did. But they wanted to be helped, and they were literate, and you know, they were basically educated, and they accepted our help, and they basically rebuilt their countries, and now it's amazing where Germany is today. So, I nothing good is going to come out of this.
Absolutely, Bob, and let me interrupt you for a second here. I wanted to let your listeners know that if they have any questions for us during the show and can't get on Blog Talk Radio, please use the hashtag that I have created, hashtag Carson's Corner, and you can tweet your questions directly to me.
That's awesome. Where can people find that out?
They can log on to Twitter right now and use the hashtag Carson's Corner, and it'll come directly to me if they have any questions through via Twitter.
Hey, I like it. I really like that.
Absolutely, Bob. So.
Yeah, it's just another way for people to keep in contact with us. So really, that's my thoughts on the whole Syria situation. It's really not good. It could be the start of something. You know, it's just who knows what's going to happen? You know, who knows? I mean, Bill Clinton in the early 90s launched attacks, you know, trying to get Osama bin Laden, and there was some reports that he missed Osama bin Laden by, you know, 30 minutes in one of these attacks, and it wound up being an aspirin factory or something like that. So, this is not unprecedented, but I just think it's a really, really bad situation. And the last thing we need to do is to get into another conflict. I mean, we're just coming down. We eliminated all combat troops in Iraq a couple of years ago. You know, we spent trillions of dollars in this country now. And, you know, Iraq is probably not better off at all. I mean, you have a huge refugee problem. You have a huge infrastructure problem in that country, and there is essentially a civil war there. Afghanistan is really bad. You know, prior to our invasion of Afghanistan, the Afghanistan economy was $2 billion. Now that we just wiped that out, and people don't trust the government there, and you know, the Taliban is almost a more legitimate force than the government. So, you know, you just it's anytime we get involved with these foreign conflicts, it usually doesn't turn out good for us.
Absolutely, Bob. And my point is, every time that we help out Afghanistan and Iraq and all this stuff, we rebuild them and help them out, and yet again, they're still blowing stuff up. You know, they're still fighting. So So, like I've always said in the past, we just need to get out of there.
Yeah, exactly. We have a lot of building to do here in the United States of America. And, you make a really, really good point there. Because they keep blowing stuff up, and they keep, because they're not illiterate populations, particularly in Afghanistan. They're in the Stone Ages, unfortunately. And they don't want to be reformed. They don't want, you know, a Western lifestyle. And we have to just acknowledge that and just move on. You can contain these forces. You can contain these countries, you know, possibly with economic sanctions, as is the case in Iran, and building an international consensus to discourage, you know, negative behavior. But at the end of the day, you're not going to change who they are. That has to come from them. I want to kind of switch topics here, because we have huge problems. We have almost a civil war here in the United States when it comes to race relations. And over the weekend, you had the anniversary of the March on Washington. Dr. Martin Luther King and various civil rights figures marched on Washington, D.C., on the Mall, demanding equal rights. And this was just absolutely historic. And here we are, you know, 50 years later, and you still have people marching in celebration of Dr. King and the civil rights movement. And it is just unbelievable, the reaction to the civil rights leaders and the whole idea of civil rights. And we still, it's really, really absolutely frightening, that the level of racism out there that still exists. And, you know, I'll give you an example, and this is just unbelievable that this is happening in the United States of America. I was just not shocked by this at all, because, again, we have racists out there. You know, President Obama, when President Obama was elected in 2008, not many people know this. And you could check out the book of John Amato and David Nyward, Over the Cliff. But we had basically a racial uprising the night that President Obama was elected, even beforehand. We had black churches being burned down. We had, talk about hate crimes. We had, four white individuals in Long Island that were frustrated with the election of President Obama that ended up beating a black immigrant. You could check this out again. This is all documented in the book Off the Cliff or Over the Cliff by John Amato and David Nyward, we had him on the show. And, it was just unbelievable. Crosses being burned, racist signs being spray painted on college campuses, which still happens today, daily. And then you had the rise of the Tea Party, the Tea Party, essentially the organized white backlash against changing demographics in America, and all the racism that still exists within the Tea Party, the ties to white supremacist groups, the racist signs depicting President Obama as this and that. And what has happened over the past 5 or 6 years is we've seen an explosion in right-wing hate groups, white supremacist groups. The website stormfront.org, I mean, they've seen a huge increase in their online community. You have the Sovereign Citizen Movement now swelling to over 500,000 members. Various right-wing acts of violence, Bruce and Joshua Turnage, a father and son duo, anti-government right-wing extremist Tea Party people that blew up a bank in Oregon and killed two people. You've got Jerry and Jeremy Kane, again, a couple right-wing a father and son duo, a terrorist group killing an Arkansas police officer. I mean, I could just go down the line of acts of right-wing violence. And it is all being fueled by money and politics. And the same money and politics that was driving the hatred leading up to the assassination of Dr. King. So it all is connected. And then you have this Laura Ingraham, who, if you go to my website, and I've been documenting this since 2008, it's LauraIngrahamSucks.com. Just an outright confirmed racist. I don't know how else to put it. I mean, you know, you don't want to use that word lightly, but I mean, obviously, it applies in this situation. And the other day, or yesterday, and this is, I'm really surprised that this is not a bigger issue. I've seen it on a couple sites, but, you know, by and large, nobody's addressing this when it should be addressed. John Lewis, the representative who was instrumental in the civil rights movement, was actually beaten by a state trooper, had his skull fractured, okay, marching with Dr. King, I believe, in Selma. And he was delivering a speech, as he does, about voting rights. Okay, now, if you know the history of the civil rights movement, Justin, bullets have literally been used to stop people from John Lewis from speaking. Dr. Martin Luther King was cut down by a bullet. Other civil rights leaders were cut down by bullets and whatnot. So this racist piece of garbage plays a clip of John Lewis speaking, right? And then she ends the clip with a gunshot, conjuring up the image of John Lewis being shot, being assassinated, which is just, you know, this, if you want my opinion, this is the equivalent of yelling fire in a crowded theater. This is not protected speech, okay? This is, and you can even argue that this is an assassination attempt on her part, because the use of stochastic terrorism is deadly. I mean, we have example after example of people like this, Sarah Palin and Bill O'Reilly, using this type of language that incites violence. So you have, you know, keep in mind what I was talking about. You have this angry white backlash, this, you know, the Tea Party crowd, which many of whom would love to take a shot. And literally, I mean, this is supported by facts. This is supported by polling. You have 25% of the Tea Party that believes that attacks against the government are justified. You have probably a percentage of the Tea Party that would love to take out a civil rights leader like John Lewis. I mean, this is the reality. Why do you think President Obama doesn't speak in the South part of the country, places like Alabama and the Deep South, where, you know, you still have Confederate flags hanging over federal buildings? Why is that? Well, because you have people that are capable of assassinating, you know, black leaders in America. I mean, it's an absolute truth. And this piece of garbage, this corporate-sponsored, you know, right-wing fascist who should be taken off the air, plays a clip of John Lewis being shot. You know, how the hell can this exist in America? How in the world do we have a corporation, you know, whether it's Fox News or her syndication company, whatever the hell this is, Courtside Entertainment, how in the world can we have them endorsing this garbage? It's absolutely ridiculous. And it just goes to show you that, you know, this is fine and dandy where somebody like this can practically, I would argue, endorse the assassination of an elected official, and they get away with it. It's really remarkable.
Absolutely, Bob. And since we're on the topic of guns right now, I wanted to tell you about I saw a article on the internet last night that Facebook and Twitter is going absolutely crazy because there's a picture of a woman holding a gun to an infant's head. So the police are looking for this woman and don't know who she is.
Well, you know, it goes to show you that we are a very, very violent culture, that, you know, violence has always been a part of American culture. And, you know, so, you know, the idea, I don't know what that was about. I did see that that picture. It's on your Facebook page. But, you know, people like Laura Ingraham and other right-wing individuals that commit stochastic terrorism. And stochastic terrorism is the use of a microphone, the use of a platform to activate the lone wolves out there. Again, we've seen a rise in right-wing terrorism over the past 5 or 6 years. People like Anders Breivik, the man who shot up a labor community in Norway, killing over 70 people. The guy literally was a Fox News viewer. You know, some of his justification for killing children and women, some of the words that he repeated were the words of Fox News pundits. People like Richard Pavlovsky, a white supremacist who killed three police officers in Pittsburgh, I believe. He was a Glenn Beck fan who believed that President Obama was going to take away his guns. You know, you could just go down the line of acts of right-wing terrorism. Byron Williams, another man who went on a shooting spree trying to kill people, the Tides and ACLU Foundation, two foundations that were featured on Glenn Beck's television show. It's this culture of fear and paranoia that makes America a very, very dangerous place for individuals, you know, speaking out in favor of civil rights, for minorities, for even individuals like myself, you know, who take to the microphone to try to, you know, call out the racism out there and try to stop, you know, voter ID laws intended to disenfranchise minorities from voting. And, you know, it's really a situation that, you know, we understand that racists are always going to be out there. You know, we understand that you're going to have white resentment out there. That's just the way it is. But this type of garbage should not be on corporate-owned airwaves. It should not be on the Sunday shows. It should be relegated to the white supremacist communities out there. You know, the Stormfront.orgs and the white nationalist groups that are online. It's just unbelievable that this is what we have in America. And, you know, I want the civil rights community, I want Sharpton and those to really make an issue out of this, because this is the same type of rhetoric that led to the assassination of Dr. King. Even the assassination of JFK, where, you know, before JFK was assassinated, you had flyers that were put out there by the John Birch Society depicting him as a traitor, saying wanted dead or alive. And, you know, we allow this. We allow this to take place, and it's not freedom of speech, because this constitutes a threat, and I would argue a direct threat to people like John Lewis.
Absolutely, Bob. But I got to make a statement. There is just as many racist blacks as there are whites. I mean, there are black people that are racist against whites as well. So.
Well, you know, it's a lower percentage. I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, if you poll black individuals and you ask them what is white privilege, almost every black person out there can tell you that they're, you know, what is white privilege and everything. And, you know, black people traditionally have been excluded from the power structure. I mean, they've been excluded from ownership. They've been excluded from, you know, lawmaking. They've been excluded from being judges. They are the minority. When you go to a restaurant, you see, an Italian restaurant or an Irish restaurant, that's, you know, identified with white culture and everything. Black people really have no way to identify themselves because they've been excluded from, you know, our history. Now we're starting to see some integration, but it's almost inconsequential, because if you look at even voting in America, okay, You know, there is a high percentage of African Americans that support President Obama, but they support the Democratic Party in general, because no matter who's running for office, you're going to have 85 to 90% of the black community voting for the Democratic Party, okay? And that's irrespective of race and whatnot. But if you look at voting patterns of white Americans, okay, almost all, you know, working class whites, a majority of whites vote for Republicans no matter who the candidate is. And Republicans have been a party that have excluded minorities from their party. I mean, you have very few minority Republicans out there. I think just a handful of African-American Republicans. And here's another statistic, too. It's really unbelievable. If you poll white Americans, okay, white Americans have about 60% of Americans have a negative opinion about African Americans, and 40% of white Americans, and again, I have to get the source on this, but I'm absolutely certain it exists. I can look it up after the show. 40% of white Americans have a explicitly negative opinion about no, 40% of white Americans believe that African Americans are violent. Okay. And, you know, it goes back to what I was saying before, that the power structure in America. Are there some blacks that hate whites? Maybe, possibly, but it doesn't make a difference, because they're not able to codify that into law. They're not able to broadcast that on television or radio. And there's no equivalency. I mean, African Americans, going back to the founding of this country, were considered three-fifths of a person. You know, that was written into the Constitution by our founding fathers. They were considered property, okay? Whites have always owned America. I mean, it is just the bottom line. And so therefore, you know, there's absolutely, to this day, there's absolutely no equivalency. And I hate to say this, but this is what we see, you know, from the right wing, this type of notion that, oh, you know, black people are just as racist, and black people are you know, they have BET television, and, you know, somehow white America is being infringed upon. That's not the case, because white America holds all the cards in our society, okay? Again, blacks are excluded from our society. They do not have the power to be racist. They just don't. You know, they don't have the power to codify it into law. And I think that's really an important point, that there's really, you know what the term cracker, you know, this is another thing too that the right wing throws out there. They try to draw this equivalency between the N-word and the word cracker. Well, you know where the word cracker originated from? That originated from the slave days, where you had the white slave masters that would crack the whip on black people's backs. That's where the term cracker came up. Now, how the hell do you compare that to the N-word, which was used to describe African Americans that are three-fifths of a person, that are by law not equal to white men? I mean, it's just unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, Bob. I mean, wow.
No, it's absolutely true. I mean, I learned that, you know, recently, that's where the term cracker comes from. And, you know, we see this in the right-wing corporate media that tries to draw some equivalency between that and the N-word. And it's apples and oranges. But again, it's used to – this is what white America believes. This is what the Tea Party believes. This is what people like Glenn Beck and Laura Ingraham and Pat Buchanan, the racist who was on her show yesterday after she played a clip of John Lewis being shot, being stopped by a gunshot. This is what they believe, that somehow white America is being infringed upon. It's, you know, we're losing our jobs, we're losing our sovereignty to the black man. And this is the argument that has been used by white racists for years, is that, oh, look at the crime among blacks. Look, they're inferior, you know, just based on their culture and the way they look and, you know, all these different things. It's the same argument that was used by the Confederacy. It's the same argument that was used, that is still used to this day by, you know, white racists. And it's really unfortunate because it stops us from having a conversation on race. And I always say we're never going to have a real true conversation on race, because racism is really just, it has to do with classism. You know, racism is used to perpetuate classism, which is one class attacking another class. And that's what was so important about Dr. King, is Dr. King understood that. He understood that, you know, poor whites are just as discriminated as poor blacks. You know, it's capital discriminating. It's capital, dividing the races and containing labor. And that's an important point.
Oh, absolutely, Bob. I couldn't have said it better myself.
Yeah, absolutely. And on Media Matters, if you go there, Media Matters noted that Ingram ran through a list of African-American crime rates before hosting Pat Buchanan, a prominent racist with white national ties. Buchanan dismissed the idea that minorities suffer any disadvantages in contemporary America, calling the idea absurd because black folks excel and are hugely popular figures in everything from sports to entertainment to athletics to politics. That's just it's unbelievable. There's plenty of evidence to suggest that black people suffer from racism, and I'll give you examples. Joshua Holland wrote a great book. It's one of my favorite books. It's called The 15 Biggest Lies About the Economy. And one of the chapters that he has in his book is it deals with racism, and it shows you how racism still exists. Let me give you an example, is that, you know, look at something like job applications, right? There have been studies done that examine people sending out job applications with black names, or people that or names that are associated with black people, and names that are associated with white people. And what they found was that even if the names associated with white people have criminal convictions and arrest records and are overall, you know, they have poor credit ratings, they're still more likely to get the job or to get the call back than someone that has a black name. And that, you know, that's just one piece of evidence out there that exists, that races, or that, you know, that shows us that racism still exists out there. And we keep on hearing things like the culture of poverty. Oh, the culture of poverty. You have Bill O'Reilly and others on Fox News talking about a culture of poverty, as if, you know, somehow African Americans are just, you know, they just don't have the values that we have and whatnot. Well, you know, what's funny is that during the Clinton administration, when you had job growth, poverty declined for the African American community. So if it's a culture of poverty, how come when we actually have a more equal economy, poverty among the black community goes down? I mean, you know, if you listen to Bill O'Reilly and racists like Pat Buchanan and Laura Ingraham, you would just believe that African Americans are going to be in poverty no matter what. But yet Lyndon Johnson's war on poverty cut the poverty rate in half. Clinton, during the Clinton administration, poverty shrunk sharply. So, you know, these are things that people really have to understand, you know, when looking at this issue.
Oh, absolutely, Bob.
Yep. So, I mean, you know, it's our job, I think, to call this out. I think that we really have to keep an eye and keep on, you know, fighting out there, because it still exists. I mean, institutional racism still exists, and you can look at criminal justice figures to understand that. You can look at lending practices. You know, we had Dr. Jeffrey Perry on the show, was it either earlier this year or last year, and he talked about something like the GI Bill. You know, how the GI Bill was used to send send millions of people to college. Well, it turns out that, you know, in the metropolitan area or in the tri-state area, the GI Bill was almost never administered to black individuals. You know, I mean, you had black people that had been excluded from the GI Bill. And that really tells us something. It really does, that still it still exists. And we're seeing this now with the Republican Party and the voter ID laws trying to make it more difficult for African-Americans to vote in Republican-controlled states. I mean, this is something that we never saw. I mean, we did see before, but the Civil Rights Act, you know, stopped it. And we're just seeing this pop up left and right now.
Oh yeah, Bob. Like I said, we can sit here all day and talk about these issues, but until we see some actions, there's not much that we can really do except keep doing what we're doing. You know what I'm saying?
I absolutely agree. I really do, and it's very, very important. It's a very, very important subject. Do you have anything else, Justin, that you wanted to talk about? You wanted to bring up?
Oh, I do. I just wanted to let everybody know that on Carson's Corner in the near future, I'm going to be having star wrestler Bruce Hart, the brother of Owen and Bret Hart, on the show. So.
That's awesome. I didn't know that. What's going on with Bret Hart?
I don't know what's going on much with Brad, but like I said, I'm in talks with getting that interview set up, and it should be set up within the next couple of weeks.
Now, speaking of racist, we have somebody in the chat room, Flycatch, who actually has listened to the show before. He writes, you get racist from any race. You're making excuses for blacks and blaming it all on the white man. You're digging your own grave by talking this way. I don't know what that means, if that's a threat. I hope it's not a threat. I really, really don't know there. But, this is the type of mindset that we see out there. This is the type of attitude that exists, you know. Making excuses. Look, it's not just black people, it's everybody. Let's look at the poor in America, okay? We know that the objectivists out there, you know, the people like Bill O'Reilly and others that are benefiting from our economy, they're making millions of dollars each year. By and large, they were born into privileged families. They depend on economic policy that protects their wealth and contracts labor out there. And they're sponsored by the same organizations. They're sponsored by the Chamber of Commerce, ALEC, Americans for Prosperity, the same, you know, groups that push out this, you know, racist propaganda, you know, the Heritage Foundation, a racist organization that publicized a study arguing that Latinos were inferior, that they have lower IQs because they're inferior. And it's the same type of argument out there. And so people like this, they have a financial incentive to always blame the individual, because there's no end to which you can blame the individual. You know, poverty, it's the individual's fault. He's making bad choices in his life. You have a high a poverty rate among blacks, or African Americans supposedly have a higher rate of out of wedlock children. Blame the individual. Blame this. Focus on the individual. Ignore society. Ignore the laws. Ignore our tax laws. Ignore our trade policies. You know, ignore all these other areas that have been, you know, controlled by the very wealthy out there, and always blame the individual. You know, that is really, really unfortunate, because this is the dominant. This is the meme in the corporate media. It's, you know, don't take a look at what causes poverty. Don't take a look at income inequality. As Mitt Romney said, we have to talk about these issues in quiet rooms. We can't have a discussion on it, and always blame the individual. And don't look at the CEO who's taking 500 times what their lowest paid worker is paying. Don't look at the fact that we have, you know, millionaires and billionaires paying next to nothing in taxes. And don't believe that there's any type of relationship between that and poverty. Don't believe that there's a relationship between the declining labor movement and declining wages and poverty. No, there's no connection. It's all the individual's fault. And this narrative is reinforced. I mean, you know, there's a great documentary about this on YouTube called Class Dismissed, and it talks about how the corporate media frames the issue of class, where you look at sitcoms like Cheers, right? The loser, you know, Norm, or the person that's down on his luck, is always portrayed as being uninterested, unmotivated, lazy, right? The type of stereotypes that are applied to poor people and minority people out there. And the rich men, you know, the George Jeffersons fill in the blank, they're portrayed as pull yourself up by your bootstraps and I work hard and anybody can make it in America if they work hard. And, you know, if you don't make it in America, there's something wrong with you. There's something wrong in your wiring. After all, America is the most prosperous place on America. It's the happiest place on earth. And anybody that can't make it here, there's something wrong with you. But in actuality, that's the exception. I mean, nobody's making it in America anymore. You know, that's why I hate this Duck Dynasty crap, because I could see right through it. You're familiar with this Duck Dynasty show, right?
Yeah.
You know, the whole purpose of this, why the corporate media loves this and is pushing this, is because it gives the illusion of the American dream that somehow, oh, look, you know, you could be a millionaire in America. You're just a temporary inconvenience of a millionaire. You know, if you work hard and you have traditional family values in America, you know, you could be like the Duck Dynasty family and have an empire and this and that. In actuality, it doesn't exist. Okay, it's literally an illusion. Okay, you know, there's going to be some people, very very few people, that get to make $1 million, that get to do this, to do that, and whatnot. And the media wants you to believe that they're somehow better than you, that they somehow work harder than you. But in actuality, everything from the family they're born into, the time that they're born, what's going around. I mean, you can even look at, you know, the genetic composition. You can look at all these different things, and that is more indicative of where they will be when they're an adult, as opposed to hard work and these things that are pushed out there by the corporate media. You know, so it makes me sick. I mean, you know, this is what is being fed to Americans by the corporate media, who have a financial incentive to keep the illusion of the American dream alive. The American dream doesn't exist anymore. It doesn't. The American dream now for most Americans is not to be homeless, is not to live paycheck to paycheck. You know, it's really declined. And, you know, this is part of the reason why this objectivism out there, this completely ignorant approach to looking at things like poverty and racism in America, and it's up to us to dismantle that barrier.
Yeah, we can try to dismantle it, but in reality, Bob, it's always going to be there.
And by the way, let me just tell you something right now. I'm not afraid of anybody out there that wants to try to – I hope this guy's not giving me a threat. I mean, I really hope so, because, you know, when you write stuff like that, it could be interpreted as a threat, just like Laura Ingraham was basically threatening the life of Congressman John Lewis. That may be even worse, because unfortunately, even though a hate radio host like that, a confirmed racist, has seen her audience drop by, you know, 50%, she still has an audience. She's still supported by corporate America. So that's worse. But, you know, I'm not afraid of the wall, because I don't, you know, I have my bumper stickers and I have my beliefs, And I'll defend them to the death. Believe me, I will. You know, I have no problem doing that. And so, you know, if you think you're going to intimidate me, I'm not some Chris Hayes. I'm not some wimpy, progressive, you know, one of these pseudo-intellectuals that you see on MSNBC that can't host a show or terrible hosts and whatnot. I'm not like them, okay? I'm a tough progressive. And someone that doesn't give a shit. I used to do MMA. I can fight. In fact, I'm still contemplating a return to MMA. So, you know, don't think you're going to intimidate me.
If somebody tries to do something to you, Bob, they're forgetting two words: lawsuit. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah. I don't know. It's just crazy. It really is. But this is what we see here, is an attempt to marginalized voices like myself. I mean, certainly one of the great things about this show is you're not going to get it on corporate-driven media, okay? The corporate-driven media, the media is basically comprised of five companies right now, and these five companies, they influence everything you hear, everything you see, everything you read, and they're not to be trusted, obviously, for obvious reasons. I mean, they depend on advertisers. They depend on money. And these moneyed interests, they call the shots. And they don't want to hear a discussion about capitalism, the decaying state of capitalism. They don't want to hear a discussion about how they are inadvertently supporting racism. I mean, you look at the major corporations in America. Walmart. Right, one of the largest corporations, you know, largest retailer, probably the most profitable, the biggest retailer in the world. They're on many of these boards. You know, they fund organizations like ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council. They fund organizations, I'm sure, like the Heritage Foundation and other right-wing fascist institutions that are pumping out, you know, racist propaganda. So they don't want to hear a conversation about this because it jeopardizes their bottom line. It really does. And that's one of the things that we have to do. Like, you know, going back to what this lady said on her radio show, that's where we fight back is, and listen, you want to threaten civil rights leaders? You want to threaten any elected official? Well, then you're going to get a boycott, okay? You're going to get a boycott of your advertisers, and we're going to drive you off of, you know, this platform that you have. And that's what happened with Glenn Beck, is after Glenn Beck called President Obama a racist with deep-seated hatred for white people, you know, he lost hundreds of advertisers, and he eventually was fired, basically kicked off the air by Fox News. And that's what needs to happen. I mean, you know, people like Laura Ingraham and other right-wing racists, they're always going to have some sort of sponsorship because they're ideologically driven companies. As I said, Americans for Prosperity and the Chamber of Commerce and these other right-wing institutions, they'll always pay their way because they need the corporate viewpoint put out there. But major corporations will be shamed into sponsoring such a hate merchant. We've got 90 seconds left, Justin. This hour flew by. This is ridiculous. Give people your Facebook page and any information about radio shows that you got coming up on your own Blog Talk channel.
Okay, like I said, coming up soon, Bruce Hart, and follow me on Facebook and Twitter at Justin Ray Harvey. And I want to say, Bob Carson, this show is a done deal, my friend.
It's a done deal, and I got to tell you, if you interview Bruce Hart, you're more than welcome to play it on this channel as well, blogtalkradio.com/Carson's Corner. Now, let me tell you what I got coming up. This Thursday, I have an MMA show. Eric Prindle and Drew Fickett, two great Arizona MMA fighters, will be on this program. Okay, you heard me correct. Eric Prindle, Bellator heavyweight, and Drew Fickett, former UFC champion, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt. Great guy. He's going to be on the show. It's going to be the first time he's been on the show for a while, about 2 or 3 years. So we look forward to having Drew Fickett on the program. Follow me on Facebook, facebook.com/BobCarsonMMA. And follow me on Blog Talk Radio, blogtalkradio.com/BobCarsonMMA. And also make sure to check out the commonsprojectnetwork.com. Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, show some respect. It's a done deal.
Absolutely, Bob.
Take care, my friend.
You too, buddy.